Robin Daly, and I'm your regular host for the Yes to Life show, a show that's all about integrative medicine for cancer. It's named the Yes to Life show after the charity I founded over a decade ago to provide support to people with cancer who want to look outside the box to see what other options there are besides those on offer from the NHS and how these could benefit them in terms of the length and quality of their lives. If you're not familiar with the charity, do take a look at yestolife.org.uk and also at thecancerrevolution.co.uk, where you'll find out about our new book on integrative medicine. For today's show, I shall be speaking to Dr. Slocum of the Chemothermia Clinic in Istanbul, Turkey. It's turbulent times in Turkey right now, and there's no telling where things are headed. Nonetheless, I was keen to speak to Dr. Slocum to find out more of what they're offering patients at their clinic. Good morning, Dr. Slocum. I'm delighted to have been introduced to you by my friend, mycologist Martin Powell, and thanks very much for agreeing to come on the show today.
Good morning, Robin. You're welcome, and I'm happy to talk to you this morning also.
Just out of interest, maybe I could start off by asking how you two know each other, because you're based in Turkey.
Martin's an old friend of my father, which was a complementary medicine practitioner in Turkey also. Mm-hmm. They met back about maybe around 15 years ago or so in London, and they've continued their contact since then. And so I know Martin since my childhood. Now I've become a doctor and we're working together. So
great.
That's a short story.
All right. Well, maybe you can tell me a bit more about that work together later on. So we as a charity, we're on the lookout for integrative care around the world all the time. And up to now, I haven't been particularly aware of any integrative cancer care centres in Turkey. So I'm just interested to know, is your clinic very unusual in Turkey, or is it part of an integrative movement there?
As you said, it's the only clinic that does complementary work in Turkey, actually. Right. And actually, our clinic is quite a special clinic. It's not only one in the Turkey, but maybe one of just a couple of the clinics that combine any treatment in a single place.
Right. Okay, well, that's good. Very interesting to know. And we'll add it to our arsenal of information for people. So it's called the Chemothermia Clinic. And it's clearly an integrative clinic, not only because it offers both orthodox treatments and a broad range of complementary approaches, but also it's clear that you take a broad and individual interest in the patient's well-being, physically, spiritually, and emotionally. Would you like to explain broadly the range of approaches you offer and the thinking behind them? So just an introduction to them.
Well, the short introduction to our clinic and our approach to cancer is that now in orthodox medicine, the approach to cancer is that cancer is based on a genetic disease. There's several mutations in the body that cause cancer, and treatment is mainly focused on a gene-based approach, targeted chemotherapeutic agents to specific cell cycles. But in the 1920s, there was another approach that cancer is a metabolic disease, and some metabolic dysregulations cause this disease. The metabolic approach is called the Warburg hypothesis. And our clinic's main thing is that we embrace the metabolic approach to the treatment of cancer, and the therapies that we offer are which we call we apply orthodox medicine, which the main therapeutic is chemotherapy, but we apply it in a specific different way than standard application. It's an improved method of insulin potentiated chemotherapy, but we call it metabolic supported chemotherapy.
Right.
Because it's slightly different than normal insulin potentiated chemotherapy, IPT. Mm-hmm. And in the normal IPT, insulin is applied priorly to the chemotherapy application. to cause mild hypoglycemia, and so which leads you to be able to apply lower doses because you're able to get higher efficacy. But and normal and most of the IPT clinics, chemotherapy is used at very, very low doses, and which sometimes gets in the way of the benefits turning into clinical efficacy. In our approach in metabolically supported chemotherapy, one difference is that we use insulin prior to applying chemotherapy, similarly to IPT, but our chemotherapy doses aren't as low as normal IPT applications. We use chemotherapy as much as possible in the aim to get a clinical response. And the main other difference is that we apply some glycolysis inhibitors to sensitize the cancer cells also, which results in serious effects. These glycolysis inhibitors are part of the Warburg hypothesis, because the cancer cells metabolism is mainly based on it's only based on using glucose, and the difference of cancer cells with normal cells is that cancer cells do glycolysis compared to normal cells oxidative phosphorylation. So the application of insulin is actually similar to the approach of the Warburg hypothesis, because what insulin does is that it lowers blood glucose levels, which gets in the way of the energy source of the cancer cells. So that sensitizes the cells to chemotherapy. And also when we apply some other glycolysis inhibitors which inhibit specific enzymes that cancer cells have to generate energy, this increases the sensitivity to chemotherapy, which leads to serious clinical response. Mm.
Just to summarize there, so what you're doing is you're interrupting the power supply, if you like, of the cancer cells by reducing the sugar that they need. And,
yeah.
And therefore, they're already in a kind of weakened state, so that when you apply the chemotherapy, they're on the back foot. They're already in not very good shape.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
One, the energy source in the blood, the glucose, is extremely low. And also, we inhibit the enzymes that will let the cancer cells to produce energy also. Right. So there's two blockades there. One, the source is cut, and also the machinery that leads them to generate energy is cut also.
I understand.
So that's how we apply chemotherapy.
Right. So just to go back one step, what you were saying is that with IPT generally, one of the aims, in a way, is to give a very low dose of chemotherapy, because there are advantages, of course, in reducing the dose in as much as you have reduced toxicity. But you've decided to apply larger doses, still not as large as in normal chemotherapy treatment, I assume.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, but larger.
The main thing about the reason we're able to apply higher doses is also now most of the IPT clinics, the main reason of lowering doses is, of course, having lower side effects. But one other reason is that the clinical staff in the clinic isn't generally medical oncologists.
Right.
So the difference of our clinic is that we're a team that we're a clinic formed by mainly two medical oncologists, which are licensed to apply chemotherapy, which are educated also to deal with complications that can be caused by chemotherapy. So we, of course, use lower doses compared to conventional protocols, but we don't cut back on doses that might get in the way with getting clinical response. So it's a balance we choose with having lowering side effects, but also getting clinical response.
I understand. So, but what you do, judging by the name of your protocol, is that simultaneously you're actually supporting people during chemotherapy.
Yeah. So what we do is we apply metabolically supported chemotherapy, but we apply many other therapeutics, which is very important in our treatment protocols. The other therapeutics that we apply is mainly hyperthermia, some special infusion treatments, phytopharmaceutical supplements, strict ketogenic diet, and also hyperbaric oxygen therapy.
Okay.
And to shortly explain why these therapies are applied and the main effect of them, is that metabolically supported chemotherapy, as I explained that, and hyperthermia is maybe most of our patients might have heard about it. It's application using the effective heat to treat cancer.
Okay.
And the main hypothesis behind hyperthermia is that, as we know, when we get a cold, when we catch a flu, the natural response of our body is to cause a fever. And the main reason of the fever is that with the increased heat in the body, our immune system works much more efficiently. Our immune cells replicate much faster. To the contrary, pathogens that cause illness are much weaker. So there's extensive research done on the effect of heat to cancer cells, and cancer cells are extremely sensitive to heat, and it gets in the way of their replication, their energy metabolism, while our immune system is working much better. So we embody hyperthermia in our treatments. It has many effects, which is one, to support the immune system, cause an effective immune response to the tumor, and also it leads to the delivery, higher delivery of chemotherapeutic agents to the tumor, with the increased blood flow in the tumor region in the body.
Okay. So there are actually several types of hyperthermia. Do you want to tell me what types you use in your clinic?
We use local hyperthermia and also whole body hyperthermia.
Okay, maybe you want to describe what those involve.
Shortly. In local hyperthermia, there's a electrode that is put on top of the tumor region, and the region where the tumor is localized is heated up to around 40 degrees. And this local hyperthermia is generally used in local or locally advanced disease, or sometimes in metastatic disease also, while there's a large primary tumor also. So the patient lies down on a sort of something like a bed, and a electrode is placed on top of the region of the tumor, and that region is heated locally. And shortly, whole body hyperthermia is like lying in a... it's again, you're in a bed, but the English word,
it's like a tent.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like lying in a tent, and the whole body is heated to up to 40 or around 41 degrees or so, which is compared to local hypothermia, it's a much more intense therapy, but it has serious benefits regarding the immune system, and it has a immune supporting effect together with its effect to widely spread metastatic disease.
And how often and how long would such treatments be?
We generally apply hyperthermia on a weekly basis, or sometimes a couple times a week.
Right, and how long would you spend in full body hyperthermia?
around 1.5-2 hours or so.
Right. Okay, that's great. So
the other therapies that we apply is we apply daily when a patient is getting treatment in our clinic. We apply daily infusional treatments, which include specific drugs together with also natural active constituents, which are we use high doses of vitamin C, DMSO, selenium, mistletoe, curcumin up to a point, and also the main thing is in our infusion treatment is using glycolysis inhibitors, which get in the way of the energy metabolism of the cancer cells. So we actually apply almost everything that has a scientific basis in treating cancer. And our infusional treatments have serious benefits, not only regarding the immune system and supporting the quality of life, but also in treating the disease. The benefits of doing daily infusional treatments, there are many benefits, which one of the main benefits is that it supports the patient to be able to tolerate the chemotherapeutic treatment that they're receiving. And patients in our clinic are almost always able to continue their daily activities, and nobody can hardly know that they're receiving treatment for cancer. And the main way we're able to achieve this quality of life is our daily infusional treatments. So
this is a very important aspect of your treatment then.
Yeah, because in a conventional approach, which my colleagues, my medical oncologist colleagues, which did for many, many years, in a conventional approach, while you're treating cancer in a chemotherapy protocol, and almost always in conventional medicine, we have a reactive perspective. A patient gets a tumor, we apply chemotherapy to treat the tumor. The patient gets a flu, a bacterial infection, we give antibiotics. We aren't, it's always reactive treatment. And a holistic approach, the difference of a holistic approach is that it's more kind of proactive. It's if we feel like we're getting sick, we use something that will support our immune system and support the natural healing powers of our body. So in conventional chemotherapy, the thing is that you apply, there are specific schedules, chemotherapy every 3 weeks, or chemotherapy every 2 weeks, the first day, the 15th day, and you apply the chemotherapy as an example the first day, and the patient will come again on the 21st day, and you only tell them to come in to the clinic, to the hospital, if they have side effects.
Right.
So you wait for the patient to be vomiting, have serious diarrhea or other complications to come into the hospital. So it's, again, a reactive approach. Mm. You wait for the patient to have side effects, and then you respond.
Right.
And in our approach, because we have our main approach is we embrace the holistic approach to treating the disease. So our daily infusional treatments are part of that. We support the general well-being of the patient every day. So we almost never see a patient having a deterioration in their quality of life.
Right, so this is actively avoiding side effects. And so you're saying that basically the kind of side effects that we associate with chemotherapy, they're pretty dire, a lot of them, and there are many of them. You're saying that in the main, you actually don't, your patients don't experience these.
Yeah, most of the side effects aren't experienced by our patients.
Mm. So that's a combination of the support and, of course, of the lower doses of chemotherapy.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, you mentioned a lot of different elements to your metabolic support. Can we just talk about some of them individually and just say why they're included? You know, high-dose vitamin C, why do you use that?
High-dose vitamin C, it has a specific effect on the immune system, which now in conventional therapeutics, there's this question about using antioxidants in cancer treatment.
Regularly brought up in UK and, hospitals, so yeah, it'd be good to talk about that.
In recent research, there's also serious data about that antioxidants actually don't interfere with chemotherapeutic agents. It's hard to like explain it in a short way, but the main thing is that, as an example, using this, it's a similar subject, like using immune stimulant herbs while applying chemotherapy, yes, because chemotherapy is also an immune suppressant treatment.
Yes.
Using antioxidants in cancer treatment while your main treatment, which is chemotherapy, has an oxidative effect.
Mm.
So these two subjects are similar, but what we have to focus on here is that, as an example, the immune suppressant effect of chemotherapeutic agents is actually a side effect of the chemotherapy, or we can also call it the effect of the chemotherapy, which we don't want. The effect of chemotherapy is that it affects cells that replicate extremely quickly compared to normal cells. So when you give chemotherapy, you're targeting highly replicating cells, which are mainly cancer cells but also immune cells. So you give the chemotherapy, you affect the cancer cells, but you also get in the way of the replication of your immune cells, so which you don't actually want to suppress. No,
it's collateral damage, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So using immune stimulant herbs isn't actually getting in the way of chemotherapy. It's getting in the way of the unwanted effect of the of the chemotherapy, which is its effect on the immune system.
Very important difference. Yeah.
So it's the way you look at the treatment. So using these complementary approaches, actually, there are some evidence of some minor drug interactions of specific herbs, which mainly act on the liver, but antioxidants or specific immune stimulant herbs, these aren't actually, they don't have drug interactions. They just interact with specific unwanted effects, actually.
Right. Okay. So, but on the positive side, the vitamin C is doing what?
It's lowering oxidative side effects caused by the chemotherapy that is applied,
yeah,
and also it's supporting the immune system,
yeah,
which we want, especially for an effective treatment. Right. We need a effective immune response towards, yeah, the tumor.
Okay, you also mentioned DMSO.
Yeah,
short for a very long name, which I don't remember.
Yeah, it's the English of it is dimethyl sulfoxide,
right?
Which it's part of actually in mainly in most of the IPT protocols.
Mm-hmm.
It's again has an antioxidant effect, and also it's an anti-inflammatory agent also, but it's mainly an antioxidant that we use to get in the way of side effects also.
All right, okay, so additional to the vitamin C.
Yeah, but the main part of our infusional treatment is anti-glycolytic agents, which I can mainly focus on. Which the main thing that we use is to our knowledge, we're the only clinic worldwide that does this.
So what are these agents?
These agents are mainly I can say we mainly use an agent called 2-deoxy-D-glucose, which is a deoxy glucose, and oxygen missing from normal glucose. So the thing it does is it's in the glycolysis pathway, which is the energy pathway of the tumor cell. There are specific enzymes that have a role in the cancer cell producing energy. And the one of the main enzymes is hexokinase. And 2-deoxy-D-glucose is a hexokinase inhibitor. So when you use 2-deoxy-D-glucose, the thing that happens is hexokinase is inhibited. So you cut the glycolysis pathway, which is the single pathway of the cat tumor producing energy. The one main thing about 2-deoxy-D-glucose usage is actually 2-deoxy-D-glucose is an agent used in scanning for cancer, and it's used in our PET-CT scans. It's an agent that is known.
Yes.
But it's a radioactive fragment is used in PET-CTs. Mm-hmm. 2-deoxy-D-glucose is actually a sugar that is known by modern medicine. It's accepted, but its therapeutic effect has mainly been researched in the last 10 years or so. And it's, to our knowledge, we're the first and only clinic that's supplying it now, orally and also infusionally, for therapeutic effect. And the effect of this is that the main good side of it is that it's just a normal sugar. It doesn't have any toxicity. You can use it at very high doses with no toxicity. But the only main effect that you see is that it causes energy depletion, which is an effect that you expect, because it affects the tumor cells, but also it affects up the energy metabolism of normal cells up to a point also, which isn't a toxic effect. It's just getting in the way of some of our body cells producing energy also. But it's mainly tumor specific, which lets it to be used in PET-CT scans. But the main effect of it is inhibiting glycolysis. So when you use an agent like this, it's firstly, you're using IPT, you're lowering the blood glucose levels. The secondly, your patient is on a strict ketogenic diet, so they aren't consuming any sources of glucose or mainly carbohydrates. So a patient on ketogenic diet, their blood glucose levels are low compared to a high carbohydrate diet. And so the energy source of the tumor is low in the blood because the glucose level is low. And when you apply these kind of glycolysis inhibitors, you're also getting in the way of even if the tumor reaches out to glucose, even if it gets glucose in it, it's not able to turn it into energy because the enzymes that leads to energy production is inhibited.
Right. So it's a really thorough approach, really, which in addition to the ketogenic diet, it actually gives you an extra boost to the mechanism that you're trying to cut.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's actually many things are applied in cancer treatment, but we're connected to the Warburg hypothesis, which cancer is a metabolic disease. So currently we accept that diabetes is a metabolic disease. It's accepted, but cancer, yes, we say it's a metabolic disease, but our approach to the treating it isn't like a metabolic treatment. So what we do is our treatment is mainly focused on treating the metabolic dysregulation which has caused cancer. Yes, we're using the therapeutics of the generic approach, which is chemotherapy, but we're also combining the metabolic treatment of cancer, which we're the ketogenic diet is this, using glycolysis inhibitors is again this, IPT is again a metabolic treatment, so it's supporting the immune system is again a metabolic therapeutic, and so it's a different approach to treating cancer.
So it's a combination of you are addressing the root causes, but you're also addressing the symptom, which is the cancer itself.
Yeah, definitely, exactly.
So on the other side, while you're busily cutting out as much of the power supply of the cancer cells as you can, you're also, you mentioned you're giving hyperbaric oxygen. So yeah. Do you want to talk about that a bit? What the treatment is and why you would add that in?
Yeah, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, we added this into our protocols around 6 months ago. And its main effect is increasing oxygen concentration in the blood, which has many different positive effects regarding quality of life, but also there is research of its positive effects together with hyperthermia, and also it's again a therapeutic. It's again connected to all again to the Warburg hypothesis, because tumor cells they don't like oxygen. They don't do oxidative phosphorylation, and they don't like oxygen. They're disturbed from oxygen supply. So when you use hyperbaric oxygen therapy, one, you're supporting the general function of organ function, the bone marrow function. It has serious benefits. But also, you're disturbing the cancer cells by increasing oxygen concentration. And also, it has research that it increases efficacy of radiotherapy seriously. And hyperbaric oxygen therapy is also accepted in conventional therapeutics to reduce side effects of radiotherapy also. And in many governments, it's paid by insurance to reduce side effects caused from radiotherapy. But it's not in conventional medicine. We aren't used to using it to treating cancer because, as I said, in conventional medicine, we're almost all of our therapeutic approaches are reactive. So there is side effects of radiotherapy. Okay, then let's apply a therapeutic agent, which is hyperbaric oxygen. But while we're applying it together with mainly treating cancer, the effect we're looking for is supporting the general organ function, the general quality of life of the patient, supporting the immune system. So it's a different approach, and so mainly the reason we use it is its effect on general organ function, the immune system, but also its connection to the metabolic basis of cancer, which is that cancer cells replicate in low oxygen concentrated areas, and it's disturbance from oxygen.
Right. And does the hyperbaric oxygen do anything to mitigate the energy loss that you said was associated with the anti-glycolytic treatment?
Yeah. We've seen serious benefits of it increasing the energy levels of our patients. And that's one of the main reasons we added it into our protocols.
Right. Okay. Now, two other things you mentioned are kind of well-known in their own right, mistletoe and curcumin. Maybe you just want to say why you decided to include these?
Well, there's extensive research about mistletoe, and its effect on the immune system has a good basis. My clinical experience with it is that when you're applying so many agents, you don't know the specific differential benefits, but Our experience with mistletoe is that its effect on especially supporting thrombocytopenic patients, which is caused from the chemotherapy application. So,
could you just explain what that means exactly?
It's chemotherapy. One of the main side effects of chemotherapy is its effect on the immune profile of the patient. So, right. And also the blood profile, which our platelet counts go down a lot and can go down in patients receiving chemotherapy. So, if platelet counts come down too much, blood transfusions are given. But our experience with mistletoe is that we saw very well good benefits of its effect on the immune profile, the blood profile of the patient, and especially its effect to support high platelet counts in patients. There's good research about its effect on the immune system, but we saw its benefit on the immune system in our clinical experience, but we also saw that it supports high platelet counts, which we need in a patient that's receiving chemotherapy.
Right. Okay. And curcumin is well known for its anti-cancer properties. It's not usually thought of as something you give as an infusion, though, is it?
It's not known much to be given infusionally. It's generally given orally, and there is serious questions about its oral efficacy. Mm-hmm. Current research, there is some data about ways to increase the oral absorption of curcumin, which the main thing is to use piperine together with curcumin, and some leading supplement companies have included piperine into their formulas, which we use also in our supplements. We use curcumin together with piperine to increase oral absorption and efficacy, and we also use it infusionally in specific patients.
Right. Okay, so now you mentioned the ketogenic diet, and on your website it's described as a modified form of the ketogenic diet. Well, what can you just say in what way it's been modified?
Now, we use a strict ketogenic diet, but when the word diet is sometimes taken as like calorie restriction, so
right.
Patients aren't on any calorie restriction. They are. We want them to eat as much as possible of the things that we permit. The diet we apply is ketogenic diet, but there isn't any calorie restrictions. We don't want the patient to be energy depleted, and we want the patient to be high in energy. And if the diet is getting in the way of and if it's causing depletion, we sometimes modify it specifically for each patient. But the main thing that we do is, it's almost the same non-ketogenic diet, but no calorie restrictions.
I understand. Okay, so you clearly use supplements quite a bit as well. Is this during treatment or after treatment or both? Or
patients are able to use supplements while they're receiving treatment, but we generally tell them to not use them while treatment. But this isn't caused because of any kind of drug interaction. Mm-hmm. The main reason that we tell the patient that it's not necessary to use supplements while they're receiving treatment is because patients come in every day and they receive infusional treatments of almost everything that they'll be taking orally. So patients, while they're receiving treatment in the clinic, we take them off of supplements because they're receiving so many infusions.
Yeah.
But while they aren't, while they're discharged and while they're at home, we use very high doses of supplements.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the main things we use as regarding supplements are, we heavily use medicinal mushrooms.
Right.
And actually the first thing that we were using, we had started to use years ago when we formed the clinic around 6 years ago. We had started out with mushrooms mainly. And we use mushroom extracts, we use curcumin, we use quercetin, and mainly the main things that we use are those stuff: mushrooms, curcumin, quercetin, and in an effective form, together with milk thistle. In some patients, especially brain tumors, we use graviola extract extensively, and those are the main things we use.
Okay. So I had a quick look at a couple of papers written by you and some colleagues. One of them is a study of pancreatic cancer treated with your metabolically supported chemotherapy with some pretty impressive results, and the other was a case report of a complete response to treatment for rectal cancer. You'd like to tell us a little bit about these two?
I can explain shortly those two papers. Now, pancreatic cancer, when we say pancreatic cancer, it's the most
the worst
cancer possible. It's the most deadly cancer, and there are two chemotherapy protocols that are licensed to be used to treat pancreatic cancer. One is a gemcitabine-based protocol, and the other is FOLFIRINOX. And and according to the books of conventional medicine, the expected median survival time in a gemcitabine-based protocol is around 6 months, and in a FOLFIRINOX-based protocol, it's 11 months. In our paper, shortly, the thing that we reported our patients that applied to our clinic in the last couple of years, we took their diagnosis date, the treatment they received, and looked at their survival times. Shortly, we had 33 patients that applied in the last three, four years to our clinic with pancreatic cancer, which all of them had locally advanced or advanced disease. So, stage 3 and stage 4 patients. Especially in a stage 4 patient, the expected survival time is, according to the book, is around 2 or 3 months with the best supportive care. So most of our patients, almost all of them, were stage 4. So stage 3 and stage 4 disease patients. And our results in our clinic is that the median survival time with metabolically supported chemotherapy is 19.5 months. And over half of the patients are were living and are still living with complete response.
That's an extraordinarily good result for.
So if we put it into percentages, in a gemcitabine based protocol, these protocols, these chemotherapy protocols, have extensive research before they're used, before their standard treatment, as all of us know. So, according to the book, according to the pharmaceutical company that has put this drug into the market, the median survival time, I'll tell you the survival rate. So, in a gemcitabine-based protocol, the 1 year survival rate is 20%, and in a FOLFIRINOX based protocol, the 1 year survival time is 48%, and in our protocol, in a metabolic supported chemotherapy protocol, with our patients, the 1 year survival rate was 82.5%.
That's a lot different.
Yes, there's a serious difference.
Yeah.
The thing that I should stress here is that now the drugs we use are the same drugs, but there's a dramatic difference in clinical results. This shows the importance of combining therapeutics in treating cancer. The main problem that we have with people treating cancer is that, especially our colleagues as MDs, is that firstly we have to accept that we are lacking good clinical results. So the way we started as a clinic, as a team, I'd like to explain that shortly in a very short way. As a team, we met about around 6 years ago or so, and we have two medical oncologists on board, my friends Professor Barkarda and Dr. E. Kesici. And Professor Barkarda is the first medical oncologist of the Republic of Turkey. He was educated in the United States, and he's the founder of oncology in Turkey. So he founded oncology in University of Istanbul around 40 years ago, and back in the 1970s. And he did largely standard conventional protocols for about 40 years until we met back around 6 years ago. And he had lost his belief in the results of treating cancer with straightforward conventional therapeutics, and he was searching for ways that he can get better results with his patients. So Dr. E. Kesici again was in a similar condition. He was searching for better results, and he didn't know what to do. And as a team, we started out like that. We knew the conventional therapeutics, and we started out with looking for scientific evidence that shows us that we can use other therapeutics to treat our patients. And I grew up in a family that was very familiar with complementary approaches, because my father was a herbalist, and that's how he had met Martin. So we started out together as a team, and I shared our knowledge, and we read many many research papers together, and so our protocols expanded and started to embody many different therapeutic stuff as years passed. And so but the starting point for us, and especially for Professor Barkarda and Dr. E. Kesici, was that they weren't satisfied with the clinical results that they were getting with conventional, straightforward conventional therapeutics. And the aim was to find specific interventions and therapeutics that can increase the survival time and also the clinical response with patients. So with our pancreatic cancer paper that we published, which we it's the longest survival time and the highest survival rate ever reported worldwide. And we have over half of the patients are still alive and with complete response, which was never reported in a stage four in a stage four pancreatic cancer patient. So we have many patients with complete response that had advanced disease, advanced pancreatic cancer, when they applied to our clinic. So that paper is very, very important, and it shows how treatment outcomes can change so much with complementary approaches.
Fantastic.
And regarding the rectal cancer paper that we published, that's a case report, and the main reason that we published it was that now the patient that we reported in that case report is was a female patient which was 81 years old when she was diagnosed with rectal cancer. And if we shortly, rectal cancer is a disease, again a deadly cancer, and it's known to be resistant to chemotherapeutics. So she was 81 years old, and she didn't want to go through surgery, which is highly recommended by surgeons, and it's one of the main therapeutics used to treat rectal cancer. We treated her with metabolically supported chemotherapy together with local radiotherapy and local hypothermia. So one thing to note is that when a patient is at the age of 81, generally you aren't able to apply chemotherapy.
No,
because the patient can't stand it, as you said. And with the means of metabolic support chemotherapy, we were able to treat the patient and get complete response. Mm. And now she's totally healthy. And, it was an amazing result.
Very satisfying for you.
It was very satisfying and happy to see how much can be done actually. When we look now, generally it's saddening because we see how much can be done, but so few of us are doing it. Mm-hmm. And so we hope. And in the future that hopefully the things that we're doing and other friends of ours are doing will turn into the standard care of cancer in the near future.
So do we, I can assure you. Well, look, okay, it's fantastic. We're about out of time now. Just briefly, I'm interested to know, do you have patients who travel to you from Europe and the UK?
We have many international patients.
You do, right?
From Europe, the UK, and some not many, but some from the United States.
Mm, okay.
But many patients from Europe, yes.
Yeah, great. It's a bit of a turbulent time in Istanbul right now, but hopefully things are going to settle down now. Yeah, so there's photos of your facility on the website, as well as several videos on a range of topics. So I'm sure listeners who are interested can follow that up. Just to say, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you today, and I'm delighted to become aware of a new location offering a great program of integrative care.
I was very happy to talk to you too, and I've heard all of the good work from Martin that you're doing, and Yes to Life is quite important and impressive work, and hopefully more people will be aware of the importance of what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
It will depend on where things go politically, whether or not Istanbul will be a destination on a UK cancer patient's list of possible clinic locations. But it's clear from talking to Dr. Slocum that there is some great work going on there, which pancreatic cancer patients in particular should be interested in. Do follow Yes to Life, me, Robin Daly, and our book The Cancer Revolution on social media. Also, Yes to Life has some brilliant regular blog posts that are worth signing up for, and of course the charity does have a regular newsletter. As for every week's show, links to resources for today's show are available on the Yes to Life website. Go to yestolife.org.uk, choose Media Centre in the left-hand sidebar, and then choose UK Health Radio. Next week is all about medicinal mushrooms. I shall be talking to Catalina Fernandez de Ana Patella and Romina Malwani from the Spanish mushroom product company, Hifas de Terra. Goodbye.